Hi, welcome to Extra Time. I'm John Raymond, the web editor for sport here at the National, and today I'm joined by Graham Cagill, who's going to be telling us his thoughts on the 2015 Formula One season that begins on Sunday in Melbourne. Thanks for joining, Graham.
Thanks for having me.
So just jumping right into it, let's get your sense of, first, how dominant Mercedes will be this year, and whether within that team dynamic, Nico Rosberg has closed the gap at all on Lewis Hamilton. And secondly, if any team out there can give any kind of challenge for these two.
I think it's always kind of difficult to tell from testing. You can obviously get a gauge on lap times and such, but as you said, it's clear Mercedes are probably do have the edge. They had the most successful season F1 teams ever had. They won 16 times in 2014, which was unprecedented. Mm-hmm. It does look from testing like they've got an edge again. There's doubts over how much speed they show. I've got a feeling we won't really know just how quick they are until qualifying in Melbourne on Saturday, when Hamilton and Rosberg really go flat out for the first time. Looking at their rivals, as you mentioned, I think there's a lot of hope that, realistically, there's always a team that's quickest in Formula One, and there's always a chasing pack. And the problem was last year, no one could really get close. Williams would have the occasional weekend, but didn't quite have enough to do it. And Red Bull did win three times, but that was largely down to errors by Mercedes with unreliability, or them colliding with each other, or a bit of random rever and hungry like we had. I think the signs are a bit more optimistic this time, and that the Williams do sound quite bullish about the fact they've stepped up the aerodynamic element of their car from last year, which was probably the bit that let them down a little bit. And they've still got the Mercedes engine. It's going to be an engine-dominated sport again this season. It's the same regulations as last year. So in that regard, I think Williams will definitely be very strong. But I think Ferrari do look like they made a step forward as too. Vettel seems pretty pleased with how the car's looking. Obviously, he's moved there over the winter. But probably the better judge of how good Ferrari are is Kimi Raikkonen, who had probably the worst season of his F1 career last year in that car. And it looked and he was at lost completely. And he looks a lot happier and has been, at the top of the lap times quite a lot in testing. So hopefully that does mean Ferrari are a bit more competitive this year, and maybe not challenge for wins, but can certainly challenge for more podiums, which is more than they did last year. Going back to your point about the dynamic with Mercedes, I think it's going to be more of the same. I think the key thing for Rosberg is that he had Hamilton in qualifying. I think it was 12 pole positions he got in the end, which was a ridiculous amount. Not going to win the championship, because normally, like, if you get the most poles, you win the championship in F1. But Hamilton had a bit of better racecraft, especially in the second half of the season. There's not really that much between them. So if Nico can improve, and obviously there's some doubts over whether Hamilton can handle the pressure, he's got a lot going on in his personal life at the moment. I think the important thing for Nico, if he's to do this, it's going to be like last year. He's got to start well.
Among those contending, you touched on this. But as you mentioned, Red Bull, they won three races last year. Daniel Ricciardo really outraced his teammate, Sebastian Vettel, who's now gone. Do you see him taking a step forward or I don't know, improving in any way on last year's kind of really impressive rookie season?
Ricciardo, in many ways, to me, was actually the driver of the season. Yeah. I know in sort of a lot of end-of-season lists that he was, and I think deservedly so. As you said, Vettel, coming into last season, and no one had ever beaten him over a season. He was seen as the invincible force. And obviously the Red Bull wasn't a title-winning car, but as you said, Ricciardo absolutely trounced him with three wins, was usually the quicker guy over race weekend. Yeah, the car possibly suited him a little bit more than Vettel in terms of style, but you'd expect a four-time world champion to still be able to drive around the problems they had. And I think Vettel was actually better than a lot of people gave him credit for. But I just think Ricciardo was that good that it made Vettel look average. And I think the pressure now is to try and step on that and improve. And the difficulty he's got is it looks like the car's not quite as good as it's been in the previous years. The chief designer, Adrian Newey, is taking a little bit of a step back. So we're not quite sure aerodynamically if it's going to be as strong as it used to be, which is like the main strength they've got. And they're stuck with the Renault engine, which looks like it's made a little bit of progress, but doesn't look like it's anywhere near the Mercedes still. And more worryingly, it looks like Ferrari have actually gone ahead of them as well. Yeah. So I think Ricciardo will again drive very well, but he might be limited by the machinery at his disposal.
And I know you were talking about Vettel and how he looks seems pleased with the car. Ferrari, they look like they have a little bit more pace than last year. They've kind of caught back up a little bit. Ultimately, do you think year one of Vettel and Ferrari, that partnership, will that be looked at as a success, or is this going to be a rocky road for them?
I think in many ways Vettel's coming at the right time, and that Ferrari hit not quite rock bottom, but as low as they've gone for a long time. Last season was their first winless season in F1 for 21 years. So, you know, they've always been used to at least some modicum of success over a season. So last season was real low. The car was very poor. Raikkonen was regularly struggling to finish in the top 10 or score points. And it really sort of showed up. So in many ways, it does look like they've made a lot of changes behind the scenes. And it does look like they're already making some immediate progress. And I think this is like a long game, really, sort of like, it was almost like Hamilton and Mercedes. The first year is kind of like getting to know each other, getting set up, trying to improve things as the year goes on. If you can get a race win or two along the way, brilliant, and that could be possible. But realistically, this is probably Vettel's where you're looking at the long game and thinking maybe 2016 or more realistically 2017, when the regulations might change again and be less engine dominated. Yeah. And he's obviously looking to follow in the footsteps of his hero, Michael Schumacher, and win a bunch of titles at Ferrari, and I think he's well set up to do it.
We've looked at, you know, the top contenders, the big teams, the big drivers, but back there in the pack, those guys are still there, you know, the Saubers and the Force Indias. Is there, first, obviously, Sauber and the Giotto Vandegaard situation, just tell us what your thoughts are on that. But is there also anything else, you know, from that back of the grid, that any particular driver that you think might be impressive, or any rookie that might stand out, or any team that has a little bit of buzz about that? You know, Force India, for example, last year had quite a strong season by standards of that second tier teams. So is there anything else like that to look out for this year?
I'll start with your last example there, Force India. They're going to be a very difficult one to know really what to expect from, because they've done so little testing, because they were one of the teams that was struggling with finances towards the end of last season, were putting a lot of pressure on Bernie Eccleston to change the way money's distributed in the sport, and they were very late getting their car developed and finished and out of the box. So I'm not expecting great things from Australia. I think the fact they've got the Mercedes engine behind them means that should help them. But I think it'll be very difficult for them to match what they did last year. I think Toro Rosso, probably of the midfield teams, are the ones who have had the best pre-season in many ways, in terms of sort of car time. And they're a very interesting team to watch this year, because they're very traditional about promoting young drivers like Vettel, Ricciardo and co. all came through them. But now they've got Carlos Sainz Jr., who's the son of the world rally champion Carlos Sainz. But they've also got Max Verstappen, who will make history on that Sunday by becoming the youngest driver to ever compete in F1 at 17. And he's not looked out of place at all in testing. He's been in some good quick laps. He's looked very consistent. Toro Rosso seemed very happy with him. And I think it'll be fascinating to see how he handles the season, really, in many ways. Mm-hmm. He hasn't obviously done that much single-seater racing as he's gone up. And to some cynics, it's a publicity stunt. But I do think there's actually some natural talent there. Could he have done maybe with doing GP2 and GP3? Possibly, but he's here now and he doesn't look out of his depth. And so I do think he's got a good chance of a point-scoring debut on Sunday, which would be an amazing achievement. Yeah. Unfortunately, Sauber, who I'm a team I'm very fond of, I think they've been done a magnificent job over the years of overachieving with minimal resources, and they've promoted a lot of great drivers through their time. I know Felipe Massa began his career with them and has always held them high in his heart. But as he said, it's been a bit of a farce, unfortunately, the build-up, in that they've got contracted to race for them on Sunday, Felipe Massa and Marcus Ericsson. But they had Vandegaard was the reserve driver with them last season, and he had a contract, it has emerged, to race in 2015. But somewhere along the line, Sauber chose to go with Ericsson and Nasser, from what I understand, for financial reasons, almost as an emergency, because they, like Force India, team really struggling on finance at the moment. And unfortunately, it's got to a stage now where we've got this farce where this morning, it was confirmed that Vandegaard should legally be allowed to drive in Australia. A court order yesterday confirmed that, and Sauber lost an appeal against that decision today. So that's really left the grid in a bit of a mess over what happens now, because Vandegaard, as we understand it, doesn't actually have the super license required to actually race in the race, but legally is allowed to. So I'm not really quite sure what's going to happen out of this, except to say it's a mess. And unfortunately, as much as she's done a great job in many other races, Manisha Kaltenborn, the Sauber team principal's position is probably almost untenable after this, because it's really brought both her team and the sport into disrepute in the handling of the drivers. So I think it's going to be very, very difficult for us to stay in the position as a consequence. What happens this weekend, I'm not sure how they're going to work this out, because obviously Vandergaard should be allowed to drive, but whether he can actually drive is another question altogether. I think it's going to ultimately come down to, unfortunately, with three race drivers, possibly a fourth, because there's claims Adrian Sutil also has a contract to drive for them, that they're going to have to start paying some drivers off or pay up their contracts. And for a team's cash strap to Sauber, that could be absolutely disastrous. So unfortunately, watch this space, but I think it's only going to get worse for the team, unfortunately.
It is a truly bizarre situation that's going on with that team. And unfortunate, too. We talked to Felipe Nasr when he was here at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, when he was doing the GP2 races. I think the kid has everything to be a star. He was, you know, media savvy and a good driver. He's got Lebanese heritage, which will, you know, play up here. And he's Brazilian, which will play up huge across the calendar. And for it's either going to be him or Ericsson, possibly both, I guess, if Sutil gets his drive. It's just a shame that team is combusting the way they are.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more. Like Nasr drove, he's got a lot of experience from being a reserve driver at Williams last year, and he also drove very well in GP2, the support series to F1, and was second in last year's championship. So he's got a lot of pace, and obviously I don't know how his preparations have been affected by this, because it must be very difficult to try and prepare for your debut Grand Prix with the possibility that, through no fault of your own, because as part of the court case, it turns out a lawyer has been representing both Ericsson and Nasr's interests in it, and they both pointed out they had no idea Vandergaard was already under contract. So they're victims of this as well in many ways. It is a huge, huge shame. And I don't think anyone's really in the wrong fund at heart over this. I think
Sauber lawyers are.
Yeah, I think Sauber did what they felt they had to at the time to try and survive, you know, as a team, and thought they could probably legally move it on at some point. But unfortunately, that decision has proved to be very wrong. It's difficult to know how it's going to impact, but you can only think it's going to be hard on everyone this weekend in Australia. But I think it's going to bring a lot of attention on the team.
Guess no such thing as bad publicity. All right, well, just wrapping it up. First race, Melbourne, Sunday. Give us a pick to win, either, I'm assuming, Hamilton or Rosberg, and I guess pick between Hamilton and Rosberg for the season champion.
I would like to be out of the box and be brave and do something completely random, like pick one of the Manor Marussia drivers or something like that. But unfortunately, I think it has to be Hamilton. I think he's got a lot of upside still to come in his qualifying form. I think he's got the better racecraft than Rosberg, and I think he's got the more natural skill under pressure. And I think those are kind of things. Those little key areas last year when it mattered most that let Rosberg down. And those are the kind of things that you can focus on. You can sit in the simulator, but you just can't teach those. That's instinct, and I think Lewis has that. And I think Rosberg, unfortunately, is the new Mark Webber to Hamilton's Sebastian Vettel of this like little dynamic. And I do think, if he has a bit more luck with reliability, Hamilton will win it quite comfortably this year. I hope not. I hope Hamilton has to work hard for it and it comes down to Abu Dhabi again. But I do fear this could be set up for quite a comfortable year for Lewis to win his third world title.
Tell us your podium, your third guy on the podium then for Sunday.
Ooh, but my hunch is Sebastian Vettel. I think the Ferrari does look quite good. I think it'll be a great story for him. Immediate says the Ferrari's looked reliable in testing, and I think it's going to be between him and the Williams drivers, but I do think Vettel is out of a point to prove. He had his reputation damaged a little bit by being so comprehensively outperformed by Ricciardo last year. I think that he'll come through and take third. With Rosberg, obviously, second.
Well, thanks again for joining me. Again, I'm John Raymond, the web editor for Sport here at The National. I've been talking here with Graham Cagill, our Formula One expert. This has been produced by DT Unnikrishnan and the National Multimedia Desk. You can find the podcast at their Twitter, at NSV UAE, or the National Sport Twitter, which is at NatSport UAE. Thanks for listening.